Okay, we're beginning here on Tzadi Aleph Amud Aleph, 14 lines down by the two dots. The Gemara here is dealing with the latter part of the Mishnah, which describes a different Tanaim's view as to what the status of this woman is vis-a-vis the two men. She had mistakenly married a second man thinking that her husband was dead, had passed away, and it was a mistake and her husband shows up. And we have the requirement there that Tetze Mizeh Mizeh. But there are some residual factors where we do say that the woman has a connection or more of a connection to the first husband because she is really married to him. So that's what Rabbi Yossi says, K'tubata nekseh bala rishon. Her k'tubah is connected to the possessions of her first husband because he is the primary husband over here, even though she has to divorce both of them. Rabbi Elazar omer, harishon zakai b'mitziyata u'maseh yadeha u'befaret nedareha. The first husband still has these rights, the normal rights of a married individual, which is that he gets her findings and her output, as well as the right to be made for her nidarim. And Rabbi Shimon omer that biatau chalitzata me'achiv shel rishon poteret zarata ve'ein avla mimenu mamzer, that the chalitza that is performed by the brothers of the first husband, those brothers actually can perform yibum, and if they do perform yibum or chalitza with this woman, that is yibum or chalitza midoraita. And therefore it works, and the Vlad is not considered to be a Mamzer. So here the Gemara discusses these three Tanaim and the interplay between them. At first we have the position of Amar Rav Huna, Batrai Modu LeKamai. The latter Tanaim in the Mishnah agree with the earlier Tanaim in the Mishnah, LeKamai Lo Modu LeBatrai. On the other hand, the earlier Tanaim don't agree with the latter Tanaim. Rabbi Shimon Modu Le Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Shimon agrees with the position of Rabbi Elazar. When it comes to Bia, which is a very intimate type of relationship, over there Rabbi Shimon permits her to have Chalitza and Yibum performed. So certainly, certainly in the issues that deal with monetary matters, over there Rabbi Shimon would agree with Rabbi Elazar's opinion and say that he belonged to her first husband. On the other hand, Rabbi Elazar does not agree with the position of Rabbi Shimon because those which are monetary matters, over there we are not kunes. Aval bia di isurahu, but by bia, where we're involved in isur and intimate relations, over there kunes, there is a kanas, and we don't allow there to be yibum to be performed by the brothers of the first husband because of that kanas. Vitarvayu modulei le Rabbi Yossi. And both Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Elazar agree with the position of Rabbi Yossi. Tani yatva tutei. Because the things that they are being gozer or being mitaken about, the things that they are discussing are things that are about normal marriages and when a woman stays together with a husband. And over there, lo kanis, over there they were not kunis. Kol shekein ktubah, certainly by ktubah, did a mishkal amepekai. Ktubah is really part and parcel of geirushin. A woman only collects her ktubah when she's on her way out of the marriage. So certainly over there they would agree that the ktubah has relationship to the first husband. If they have these other aspects which they attribute to the first husband, despite the fact that she has to divorce him, they still grant him certain rights of normal marriages, then certainly in a case where we're talking about an item that's a part of separating, that they would agree with Rabbi Yossi. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi lo mod lehu, he doesn't agree with them. Ktubah de mishkal meipaku de lo konis. When it comes to the ktubah, which is all about divorce and the woman leaving the marriage, over there he was not konis. Avahani di atva tutei konis. But with the relationship to these items that are mentioned by Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon, over there he is kones, over there he says there's a knas, and the husband is not entitled to them. Now, it's not exactly clear what the word knas means over here. As Tosafot points out, what exactly does that mean that we're talking about a knas? Because these are items, monetary items, that the woman has, and now she's giving them over to the husband. If we didn't make her give them over to the husband, she would keep them herself. So what type of knas is this that she would keep them for herself? And so he says, v'chashiv knas, ma she'en mitziyata ma'siyadeh lebao, v'shim de'ika la eva. Because that generates a certain amount of hatred. V'v'gam etokach en la mizonot. And because of that, she also will not receive mizonot in lieu of these items that she's providing to her husband. So because it's considered a knas, not because necessarily the items themselves, when you say she can't give them to the husband, that's a knas. Now, the kanas here is that we sever the relationship between them. That's one item. And the second is that there is no sort of border between them in the sense that her masayadaim go in exchange for mizonot. She's not entitled to mizonot. So that's why it's called a kanas. Now Rabbi Yochanan disagrees with Rav Huna and says just the opposite, and says Kamai Modu the Batrai, that the earlier Tanaim agree with the latter Tanaim, Batrai Lo Modu the Kamai, but the latter Tanaim in the Mishnah do not agree with the earlier Tanaim, and now the Gemara will explain that. Rabbi Yossi Modu Le the Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yossi, who says that the Ketubah is connected to the first husband, agrees with Rabbi Elazar, because Ketubah Dimidei Dida, Ketubah, which is a payment from him to her, Lo Kanis, over there he didn't put a Knas on it, over there in the case where the quote-unquote movement of money is from her to him, there certainly he's not going to be kones. If he allows the payment to go from the husband to the woman, certainly he's going to allow the payments that go from the woman to the husband. On the other hand, Rabbi Elazar doesn't agree. Those items that have to do with movement of money or objects from her to him, that he is granted rights to because the loss would be his, not hers, really. So therefore, lo konis. Over there, he's not konis. On the other hand, when it's a ktubah, it's a payment from the husband to her, there konis. There he was konis. Now, you have to look at this in a looser sense, because in that list is also included hafarat nidareha, which is not a monetary manner. Nevertheless, Rabbi Elazar says that he's entitled to that. So you have to talk about not that necessarily money exchanging, but entitlement rights. For whose rights are we protecting over here? In the case of Rabbi Yossi, we're protecting the rights of the woman by allowing the ketubah to be paid out of the estate or the monies of the first husband. On the other hand, by Rabbi Elazar, we're protecting the man by having all these rights that he's entitled to be protected. And that's what it means. V'taravayu modulei the Rabbi Shimon, and both of them agree with Rabbi Shimon. Mahani demichayim lo kansei. So thereby, when he's alive, they were not kones. They allow a certain amount of interaction between the wife and the first husband. Biyad l'achar mita. Bia, which has to do with the brothers who are not involved in this situation at all, lo koshikein, certainly they should allow that. Rabbi Shimon, lo modi lehu. But on the other hand, Rabbi Shimon does not agree with Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yossi, because bia de lachar mita lo konis. Bia, that's after the death of the husband, there they didn't have any kanas. They didn't impose any restrictions on the woman. But, aval, hani mechaim konis. Anything that's while she's still alive, we do have these issues that are blocked in order to force them to separate and not have them to be together. And that's why Rabbi Shimon will say that, in terms of the Avam, if he does Biyah, it's fine. But with regards to these other items that Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yossi mentioned, he will not agree with them. So you have Rabbi Yochanan and Rav Huna arguing about which way do the Tanaim view themselves. Do they view themselves as being the Kula or the Chumra? According to Rabbi Yochanan, as we move through the Mishnah, each one of them is the Chumra. Rabbi Yossi is the most Mekil, then Rabbi Elazar, and then Rabbi Shimon is the most machmir, because he only allows things after death. Whereas for Rabbi Huna, it's the other way around. Rabbi Yossi is the most machmir, and then Rabbi Elazar is mekil, and then Rabbi Shimon's even more mekil. And that question about how to view the relationship between these Tanaim is this machloki between Rabbi Huna and Rabbi Yochanan. Nisej shelo birshut. If in the Mishnah we mention the fact that if she gets married without permission of Beit Din, she didn't need the permission of Beit Din because two Edim came and testified to the fact that her husband had passed away. In that case, Rabbi Shimon seems to say that she can be released and we're not kones her there because she's really an anusa. What was she supposed to do? She had two Edim that came along and said that she could get married, and therefore she is muteret achzor lo. She's allowed to return to her original husband. Now the Gemara says, Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rav, Hachi Hilchata, the locha is this way. So Amar Rav Nachman, Ganva Gnuve, Lamaloch, why are you stealing or secretly saying this? Isvir lach ki Rabbi Shimon, if you hold like Rabbi Shimon, Ema locha ki Rabbi Shimon. Say it straight out, straightforward, that the locha is like Rabbi Shimon, Dishmatecha ki Rabbi Shimon kazla. Because when you say the halacha is this way, you're saying basically the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. V'chita imayi amin halacha k'Rabbi Shimon. You're saying, well, if I say the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, mashma afilu k'maita, that means that the halacha will also be Rabbi Shimon in the previous statement in the Mishnah with regards to the Yavamim and their ability to have biyah with this woman. So then just say, im halacha k'Rabbi Shimon ba'achrona. Just say that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon in the latter case. Kasho, that is a difficulty as to why Rav Huna Marav didn't say that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon ba'achrona, to make it clear that they were following that position. Now the question of ganva gnuve can be viewed in one of two ways. Either the question is, if you're saying the halacha is like a certain party, why don't you just name them? Or the question might be, what is the reasoning that you're paskening? Okay, you paskening like Rabbi Shimon, but why don't you give a reason? If you're not giving a reason, it must be because of his reason, and then just name him instead of just saying it as Stam. Amar Rav Sheshet, Amina kinaim b'shochev Rav, Amar l'hashmaitata. Says, I'm thinking to myself that Rav was dozing off when he said this halacha, because here Rav Huna quotes it in the name of Rav, but it doesn't make so much sense. Why? Because halacha michlal de plige. The fact that he says now that the halacha is this way, in its essence, paskening like Rabbi Shimon, implies that the chachamim disagree with Rabbi Shimon's position. Mar says, my havalot amevot, minas ansa. Wait a minute, what's she supposed to do over here? Why the chachamim disagree with Rabbi Shimon? She's really an anusa here. She had no other way to verify it. She has two edim, which fulfills any judicial process that she had to go through. And therefore, why would we tell her that she has to now divorce both parties? And why can't she go back to her original husband? The chachamim should agree. Ve'ol tanya. And in addition to that, we have a braita that says, kol arayot shebetorah ein tzrichot imenu get. Anytime there's an illicit relationship with any arayot of the Torah, you don't need to get a get in order to dissolve that relationship. Exception to a case where a woman marries based on Beit Din, meaning an Eidechad came, and through the verification in Beit Din, she's granted the right to get married. And then her husband shows up. In that case, she will need a get. Now, that's only if she got married with the permission or the stamp of approval of Beit Din. Implied in that is that if it was done by Edim, two Edim showed up and she didn't need Beit Din and she got married based on those two Edim, that we wouldn't have to in that case get a get. Mani, who's the author of that braita? Ilem Rabbi Shimon. If the author of that braita is Rabbi Shimon, I'll be Beit Din mi ba get. Wait a minute, since when does Rabbi Shimon require Beit Din? Even if she got married with the permission of Beit Din, who says he needs a get? Vatanyo, don't we have a braita, Rabbi Shimon Omer? Asu Beit Din bahoratan, kezadon ish b'isha. When Beit Din gives a psak halacha in order to grant the right of this woman to get married based on an Eid Echad, that is the equivalent of a man and woman who have an extramarital affair, bimezid, bizadon, intentionally. And over there, when you have Eshed Ish, when someone has an extramarital affair, they don't need a divorce from the party that they had the affair with, al pi edim. On the other hand, if it is done al pi edim and not al pi beitin, kishigigat ish biisha, it's the equivalent of an unintentional extramarital affair, again, where you do not require a get. In both these cases, you do not require a get to dissolve it. It has implications in terms of how we treat the woman vis-a-vis her husband. In the case of the Beit Din, she will have to separate from her husband because it's like a zadon. Whereas by the case of two edim, she's like a shogeg and she will be able to return to her husband. But in neither case does Rabbi Shimon require a get. Elalav Rabbanan hi. So the braita before must be authored by the Rabbanan. And if it's authored by the Rabbanan, they only need a get when it was done with Beit Din's approval. But by two edim, they don't require a get. And they acquiesce to the position of Rabbi Shimon. Where it says, no, olam Rabbi Shimon hi. That bright is Rabbi Shimon. Vitoritz hachi. And read the bright in this manner. Rabbi Shimon Omer, asu Beit Din bahoratan, kikavanat ish biisha. That when Beit Din gives a psak to permit the woman to go get married, it's the equivalent of when a man and woman get together, the shame kiddushin, ubayi get. And they need a get in that case. Al pi edim shalo bikavanat ish biisha. If they do it al pi edim, it's the equivalent of when a man and woman get together l'znut, but have no intention for kiddushin or marriage. Velo bayi get. And therefore, Rabbi Shimon would also require a get in the case where it was done al pi Beit Din. And that's why that braita would be Rabbi Shimon, not the Chachamim. If the braita is Rabbi Shimon, we have no proof that the Chachamim agreed to this position of Rabbi Shimon. Ravashi amar le'inani surak dani. Now this is the way to read the braita. Again, it'll come to the same conclusion that we don't have any information about the Rabbanan's position, but we can read that braita like Rabbi Shimon, but in this manner. V'achi gamar asu Beit Din bahoratan, kezadon ish biisha umitasra al balo. It's not talking about the ramifications vis-a-vis get. It's simply talking about the ramifications vis-a-vis this woman to her husband. And therefore, she marries based on Beit Din. Then she has the equivalent status of someone who had an intentional extramarital affair, umitasra al balo. And therefore, she's asur al balo and she can't get married. Al pi edim. On the other hand, if it's done al pi edim, kishigigat ish biisha, it's the equivalent of an unintentional extramarital affair, velo mitasra al balo. And she's not restricted to her husband. Without addressing get or no get, it's simply addressing the issue of whether she can return to her husband, as we explained in the braita itself, but before we assume that it was also speaking about a get. Ravina amar linyan korban ktani. It's actually written about the korban. Asu Beit Din bahoratan, kezadon ish biisha, velo matya korban. When Beit Din goes out and gives a psak, permitting the woman to get married, and she does, she doesn't bring a korban, the equivalent of when someone has an intentional extramarital affair. In an intentional extramarital affair, there is no korban. Now, as Tosafot points out, they're for different reasons. By the case of Mezid, it's because she doesn't qualify to bring a korban. When you do it intentionally, you don't get the ability to use the kapara of korban. Over here, it's not because the woman did something wrong intentionally. It happens to be the same outcome, but for different reasons. It's just a simano ba'alma. It's not telling you that the woman who got married based on Beit Din is held accountable for that because she should have checked more. Truth is, she should have checked more, but we're still not going to call her a Mezid. On the other hand, when it's al pi edim, when she marries al pi edim, because she got ish bi isha, it's the equivalent of an unintentional extramarital affair where you do bring a korban. And same thing over here, umatiu korban. She doesn't get the indemnification of Beit Din, and therefore she has to bring a korban. So in the end here, we find ways to explain this position of Rabbi Shimon in that braita by avoiding talking about get, and therefore saying that even according to Rabbi Shimon, you might require a get when Beit Din marries them off. And therefore, fundamentally, there'll be a difference between the Chachamim and Rabbi Shimon. You can see that on the last Tosafot on Sadi Aleph Amud Aleph, which is that according to the Chachamim, you do require a get from the second party over here, because we want to publicize the issue, and in publicizing that issue, it'll make her more asur to the first husband. On the other hand, Rabbi Shimon believes that with regards to the second husband, we don't give a get, because that would imply that there was something real about those Kiddushin. And it's clear that there's nothing real about them because she was still married to her original husband. And therefore, Rabbi Shimon says, no get is needed when it comes to these situations from the second husband. And that'll be the key differential or difference between the position of the Chachamim and Rabbi Shimon as to whether we require a get in that case from the second husband. And some say, Hakamaita Rabbonani, Betari Tochi, that the Braita was actually by the Rabbonan. But then read the Braita like this, Chutz Meishirish, V'niseita Pi Beitin. That when it made the exception over there, it didn't mean just the exception of Eshet Ish, but it means the exception of Eshet Ish, as well as a woman that got married by Beit Din. In those cases, you need a get. So they believe that you need a get in those cases, where Rabbi Shimon would not. And therefore, the Braita for the Chachamim will address both issues, both the case of Alpi Beit Din, as well as the case by Shnei Edim, because we're talking about Eshet Ish, which is with two Edim, and the other case of Alpi Beit Din. And since it's talking about both cases, you can't be Medayek anymore, that the Shita of the Chachamim is, that's true by Beit Din, but it's not true by the case where she marries al pi edim, because now both of them are mentioned in the braita for the Rabbonon, where they say that they are asurim. And therefore, that will uphold the Chachamim's position that she's not allowed to return to her original husband, even if she got married al pi edim. And that will be the difference in their opinion, that Rabbi Shimon believes that the woman is allowed to return to her original husband because she was basically anusa, and my havalala meivad, what she could have done. Whereas the Chachamim say, no, she gets a get from the second husband because she's not allowed to turn to the first husband. And we do hold her somewhat accountable over here. We don't let her return to the original husband. And that's why we require a get from the second husband in order to publicize the restriction with the first husband. Pemeitiv Ula, mi amrina and mai havalon meivad. Ula challenges this basic understanding that we've had here, where we say the woman is really an anusa, that she's really not held accountable here because what could she have done in this situation? How can we say to her that you're free now to go back to your original husband because there was nothing else that she could have done? But we have a slew, as we're going to see here, of Breitot and Mishnayot that seem to indicate otherwise. Vatnan, don't we have a Mishnah in Gittin that says, Katav l'shem malchut she'enu hu genet, if they wrote it based on the years or the king of the Roman Empire? In general, the Gemara uses the term malchut she'enu hu genet, as Rashi points out here, to refer to the Romans, who they didn't believe had their own culture or really were considered to be properly ordained rulers. If you wrote that as the dating in the get, the Shem Malchut Madai, or you did it based on the Median Empire, or the Shem Malchut Yavan, or the Greek Empire, the Binyan Bayit, or from the Binyan Beit HaMikdash, or the Churbana Bayit, or the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, all of those are problematic because they reference to not the local authority that is found where these individuals are. As the Rabbeinu Tam points out over here, the local authorities are very makpid on these things because divorcing or divorce itself is a very big thing and a public issue because people generally don't divorce. And therefore, since it's such a public issue, mishum darchei shalom, you have to write the local authorities and their name and their rulership in the document. Here you're using these outside benchmarks for the dating, and therefore it's considered to be a pasul get. Now, truthfully, it works out in the end that today, as Tosafot points out, and many of the Rishonim, where the local authorities really don't care, we start dating our gitin, the Briat HaOlam, and we do whatever we want because there's no longer a hakbada by the local authorities over what dating is found in the gitin. But in their time where it was a hakbada, over there you have to be careful. If you don't do it, it makes the get pasul. Even though by other shtarot it may not affect them, by a get, we're very makpid and it would make it pasul. In addition to that, Hayab Mizrach, he was in the east, Bekatav Marav, and he wrote they were in the west. Bimarav, he was in the west, Bekatav Mizrach, and they wrote in the east. They'd say, Mizeh, Mizeh, v'chol ha'derachim ha'elu ba. They have to get divorced from both husbands because the get is a pasul get. And everything else, all these other penalties that are mentioned in our Mishnah will also apply to her. Vamai, why don't we say over here, Lema, I have a little mevat. What could she have done? She got a get. She thought she got a kosher get. Why should she be penalized for the fact that she got a get and then went off and got married based on that get? Just because it's a pasul get, we're going to penalize her? What could she have done? The answer is, Ibayla le'kruye grita. She should have read her get. It's very interesting because I don't know what the literacy rate was in those days, especially amongst women. But over here, the Gemara is saying as a dochak answer to this, that maybe she should have read her get to know whether it was pasul or not pasul. Now, in terms of who is in the west and who's in the east, Tosafot over here discusses that issue. He rejects the Rivan's explanation that it's speaking about the Baal himself and takes up the position that it's referring to the sofer. And we're going to see that later on in the Masechta, that there are Moraim that instruct the Sofer to write the location of the Sofer, not where the get is being sent. But in addition to that, he mentions that it's not the Sofer that is Posel. In the end, it's really the Edim. We need to know where the Edim were when it was signed. And the default is that wherever the Sofer is writing, that's probably where the Edim are. And therefore, the Sofer has to write where he is, because that's where the Edim who are going to sign the get are also. And that's the way Tosafot explains the subject of this Mishnah that we quoted from Gitin. Now, Tosafot also later on mentions we're going to now have a series of questions, and he says each one of these questions, even though we're going to see a similar answer to each of the questions, they are building one on the other. Each one of them, there's an additional chiddush over here. So, Avon Shimi Barashi Tashma, Akunes Jivim To, Valchad Saratavin, he said, a person who marries a woman who is a Yivama, and then her co-wife goes off and marries also. And we find out now, all of a sudden the Yivama, who was the one who performed the Yibum, doesn't have the ability to reproduce. And therefore she's not a real wife even of the first husband, but she certainly cannot be the Yivama over here. And now this co-wife really shouldn't have been released. So she has to be divorced from her new husband. She cannot marry the Yivam. And again, all the penalties mentioned in our Mishnah apply to her. Vamai, again, why? What could she have done? Her co-wife got married and performed Yibum over here. What are we going to hold her accountable for? She should have waited to see whether that marriage consummated and whether that Yavama could become pregnant. And then she could have gone off and been free. The fact that she didn't wait and got married before that, we're going to hold her accountable for that. Amar Abayi, Tashma. Kol Arayot Shamru Potrot Sarutehem. All the cases, like our first Mishnah in the beginning of the Masechta, where any Arayot who are co-wives here, then their co-wives are permitted to go then and marry anyone else because there's no Yibum over here. So then if they did that, and then we find out that the Arayot, one of those women that created the restriction for the Yavam, was actually an Ailonit, then these co-wives actually were then available and needed to have Yibum or Chalitza performed. Again, they have to divorce their new husbands, plus they are not allowed to marry the Yavam. And that she's penalized with all the things mentioned in our Mishnah. Va'amai. Why again? Neimam, I have a lemevat. What could she have done over here? That Tosafot says the additional chiddush over here is that in the first case, the problem that arose was after the marriage. Meaning that once the Yivama went and got married, then we're going to say to her, listen, why don't you wait? Over here in the case, Yibum was never in the picture because her co-wife was one of the Arayot. And if it's an Erva, Yibum was not even on the shelf. It wasn't even a consideration. So now, what are we going to say about that? Ibayla lemtune. She should have waited. So even in a case where she had no feeling or no reason to believe that there was going to be Yibum over here, she should have waited to make sure that this Erva is actually a woman who is able to reproduce. And then she would have been released automatically, but she should have to wait for that. So that's the Kiddush here. Even though she had no Havamina, we still blame it on her that she should have waited. Amarova, Tashma, Katav Sofer Get the Ish, Vishovar the Isha. In a case where a man divorces a woman, he writes the get on behalf of the man to give to the woman, and he writes a receipt for the woman to give to the man when she collects her ktubah. Vita'ah. But the sofer makes a mistake here. V'natan get the isha. Instead of getting the get to the man to give to the woman, he gave the get to the woman. Veshovar leis and gave the receipt to the man. Then they exchanged documents. And then the man ended up with the get, and the woman ended up with the shovar. They suddenly open up the documents, and after some time, they realize that the man is holding the get, and the woman's holding the receipt. It's backwards. So there, if she got married based on that get, or thinking she got a get, she has to divorce her new husband, she can't go back to her original husband, and she has all the penalties mentioned in our Mishnah. Why don't we say, what could she have done in this situation? How was she supposed to know that she didn't end up with the get? And as Tosafot says over here, the Chiddush is, you're not going to say that she should have read the get, because maybe she did read the get, and then gave it back to the sofer, but he just handed it to the wrong person. Nevertheless, we say over here, she should have read the document, not originally even, but even when she got it from the sofer, she should have made sure that she ended up with the get. Amravashi tashma, shina shmo, ushma, b'shemi ro, b'shemi ra. If for whatever reason he changes his name or her name or the name of the city or the name of her city, again, that's a puzzle get because it has wrong information in it. They'd say mizem mizeh. She has to divorce her new husband as well as the original husband she can't go back to. Again, name of Mayavala Meva. She got a get. She didn't know that there was some problem in the get. And even if she had read the get, she might not have noticed the problem. She would have to ask someone else, does he have another name? Is he called something else over here? So she would have to ask questions. Do we say over there that it's problematic? The Gemara still says he by the Kruei Gita. Again, what she should have done is read the get and ask questions about it. Amar Avina Tashma. Here we have another case like this. Concept of get kereach. If she uses a get, that's a get kereach. A get kereach is a type of get that we'll get to in the Gemara in Gitin, in which instead of signing the edim inside the get and having the get be written on the inside, what they used to do is they used to write the get, one line of the get, fold it over, and then have the edim sign on the back of it, then write the next line of the get, fold it over, have the edim sign. It was a way to slow down the process of the get in order to hopefully cool down some of the hot-headed situations where a person wouldn't write the divorce or give a bill of divorce so quickly. But in a case where there are more folds in the get than there are signatures by edim, that's called the get kereach, because the edim didn't sign on each one of the folds. So it's a pasul get. Over there, again, all these issues happen. She has to divorce a new husband, her original husband she can't go back to, and she has all the penalties. Again, what could she have done in this case? And here again, Tosafot says, the Chiddush is that over here, there's no way, even if she read the get and asked questions, she wouldn't have known that this is a puzzle get unless she went to an expert, a Bucky, or to a Beit Din. So nevertheless, we stay by the Kruei Gita. She should have read her get, and that's why she's held accountable in all these cases. Now, Rapapa, Savar the Meivad, Uvda, B'mayavah the Meivad. Rapapa, based on our psak over here, says that the Gemara seems to indicate that we can utilize this reasoning, that a woman is caught in this difficult situation, we can say about her, Mavala Meva, what could she have done? Samalei Ravuna Breda Revishua, the Rapapa, Vatanya Kohani Matnita. Didn't we just quote all these Mishnayot and all these Braitot that seem to indicate that we don't say this regarding a woman? Amalei Velav Shaninu. So, Rapapa says back to him, we gave an answer for each of them. Why over there we hold her accountable and why it might be different over here? Over there, there were reasons. She should have waited. She should have read the get. All of these other reasons where we hold her accountable because she should have done something. That's not the case here. He says that the Gemara over there is giving answers that are difficult, trying to ward off the question, but it's clear that the answers are not the easiest answers. The pashtut of all those Mishnayot and Braitot is that the woman is held accountable in these cases, even though we would say Mahavilei Mevat. And that means, basically, we don't say Mahavilei Mevat. The fact that the Gemara answered them up in a difficult way shows you, yes, they're trying to give an answer, but it's an answer that really does not sufficiently explain the Mishnayot and Braitot. And the underlying theme that you really see here is that the Mishnayot and Braitot indicate that we don't invoke this principle of Mahavale Meivad. So Amaravashi, Ulekalo lo chayshinan, and we do not worry about rumors. If the woman got married either based on Beit Din or based on Tu Edim, and then afterwards we hear rumors that her husband's alive, we don't worry about those rumors. Hi, Kala. What type of rumors are we talking about here? Ilema Kala debata nisuin. If we're talking about rumors that surface after she's already married, Hamra Ravashi Chadazimna. We already have this information from Ravashi. Dama Ravashi Ko Kala debata nisuin lechashina. Any type of rumors that surface after marriage, we ignore them. As Rashi says over here, if a queen gets married to a woman, and then all after he's married to her, they start to surface rumors that she's a grusha, we don't worry about that, because they didn't surface before the marriage. And as Tosafot points out over here, that yesh mefarshim dafka diatzakol shemit tilat nisuin ayah bisur. That's only if the rumors are about the original nisuin being problematic. But if the rumors surface about a latter problem in Nisuin, then we would listen to the rumors. And then Tosafot the Ri rejects that and says, Eifshar lomar kein, because even in cases where rumors surface later in the marriage, once we're in Nisuin, the preservation of the marriage and the unity of the husband and wife trump everything over here, and rumors will not dictate. We need evidence and not rumors in order to wreck a marriage. So Nagar says, maybe because in this case, she went to Beit Din to get permission to get married, and we permitted her based on Beit Din. That's Kikala Kamei Nisuin Dami. The fact that she went to Beit Din to get permission already shows us that her reliance either on these Edim or on an Ede Echad was somewhat suspect, because she needed Beit Din's approval to go get married, and that means that we did have some suspicions that the husband's alive. So now when these rumors surface, maybe they join together with that uncertainty that was there that she went to Beit Din for, and we would believe the rumors. So now we would have thought maybe Rav Ashi over here would say that the rumors do hold water. So therefore, Sharin Kala Kehumai Nisuin Dami, and therefore the rumors as if they surfaced before the Nisuin, Betitzar, and therefore she would be restricted from staying married to this individual, Kamash Malan, that we do not worry about the rumors in this instance. Okay, we're going to stop here, three lines down on the top of Tzadik Bet Amud Aleph.